The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, a very, very good morning to you. How are you?
Okay, Tov. Well, you know, it's jellyfish season in Israel now, Howard, and the jellyfish are apparently attacking beaches all the way up and down the Israeli coast. I read that the jellyfish swarm is something like a few hundred kilometers in length, moving up from Egypt towards the beaches of Israel. There's a special website that people can go onto to see which beaches have got jellyfish and which do not. The website is called meduzot.co.il, meduzot obviously being the Hebrew word for jellyfish. And two important myths to talk about. First of all, apparently peeing on a jellyfish sting, contrary to what you saw in Friends, is not effective. So that's the first important thing to know.
The second thing is
all around Tisha B'Av, because there is this notion that the jellyfish will be here until Tisha B'Av and then they'll suddenly leave Israel's waters. Now this year, of course, Tisha B'Av is quite late. It's another month away. So I think people are hoping that by then the jellyfish will be well and truly gone and the beaches will be back to being clear enough for people to swim. So that's currently the talk of the town for those people who've got the opportunity to head to the beaches, school kids, thing, you know, people like that who are on their holidays now.
Incredible. I mean, that's really, it's actually quite scary because
It's a big event. Yeah, yeah, it's a major thing that happens on the beaches, yeah, for sure. And of course, the beaches, not only the water, but of course, the beaches get polluted with all the jellyfish, some of which are quite large. We're told that the sting is not lethal. Nobody has died, apparently, from the jellyfish sting of the type of jellyfish that are around here. But, you know, people are a little bit sensitive to being stung by jellyfish, so generally keep out of the water.
All right. The IDF announced yesterday that it had discovered another tunnel under the Gaza border into Israel. How was this discovered? Tell us about the story.
The 18th cross-border tunnel that has been discovered since the end of Operation Protective Edge back in 2014. This tunnel was discovered via the construction of the protection wall that's currently being put up around the Gaza border. So very interesting indeed, because obviously this is really what the protection wall is all about. The wall is being constructed along about 70 kilometers from within the sea. A new sea barrier has been built near Zikim Beach, and then all the way around the Gaza Strip, completely enclosing it. Apparently, already something like 30 kilometers of this wall have already been constructed. The wall is going to reach 6 meters in height, and of course go down below the ground very, very substantially. And that's really where this tunnel was discovered, when there was an attempt to try to drill down underground and build the next section of this barrier wall. All of a sudden this tunnel was discovered. It seems to be an old tunnel, not something that was discovered, that was built very recently. But nonetheless, obviously all of these tunnels represent a major threat to people in Israel, because they come under the border and they infiltrate into Israeli territory. And so obviously that's very, very concerning. And the fact that, you know, this one hadn't been discovered up until now is potentially an area of concern as well, which the IDF will be looking at. But it goes to show what value this wall really has when we begin to construct it. And we can see that by going down, however far down below the ground this wall is being constructed, that we're hitting tunnels that were there that remain and have remained undiscovered, at least up until now. So this is, I think, a very interesting and important development. Obviously, the IDF has cordoned the area off, is examining the details of the tunnel. You know, there is no indication that the tunnel has been active operation in recent times. But I also guess that a lot of what they will be discovering, we won't get to hear about. But, you know, thinking about the fact that there have been 18 tunnels discovered just underneath the Gaza border is just an indication of how serious the Gaza terrorist organizations are about somehow gaining infiltration into Israel. And that kind of sets itself off against an interesting study that I saw, which polled people in Gaza about what their view is about Israel and the whole two-state solution idea. And something like 50% of those people living in Gaza believe, first of all, that ending the occupation in inverted commas, the best way to do that is through armed conflict. So half of Gazans believe that whatever activities, whatever violence, whatever military activities are conducted against Israel have some justification. But I think the thing that kind of surprised me the most and sort of gave me some glimmer of hope is that something like half of the people living in Gaza believe that the two-state solution is the answer. I don't know how that sets itself off against the previous statistic that I quoted, where half people feel that ending the so-called occupation through armed conflict is the answer. But at least half of the people living in Gaza do believe in the two-state solution, which, you know, if one takes it to the next logical level, means that they believe in allowing the state of Israel to exist, and for people to live alongside the state of Israel, hopefully in peace and harmony. And I think that for me, that was surprising in a good sense, because I had the impression that really most of the people living in Gaza were just looking for Israel to be destroyed rather than acknowledging that a two-state solution is the answer. So I think that there is some reason for hope there, but I think there's still obviously a long way to go until we convert that into something more concrete where we can all survive side by side and allow everybody to get on with their lives in peace and security.
And of course, we can't ignore the influence of Hamas, the indoctrination of children from a very, very young age and the teaching of hate as part of the syllabus.
We absolutely can't ignore that, and I think that that's where the confusion kind of stems from. I think that people inherently want to believe that living side by side is the right answer, and yet the influence of the indoctrination by Hamas about the armed conflict and how important it is to oppose Israel and to come to the border and to send balloons and to fire rockets, you know, that kind of indoctrination still obviously leaves its mark on people. And hence you find that, you know, half of the people living in Gaza and a very high proportion of the people living in the Palestinian Authority area also believe that armed conflict is the best means of supposedly ending the conflict. It's a little bit bit strange to think that you have to initiate a conflict to end a conflict. But that's how some of these people believe.
All right. And a trade delegation from Indonesia has been visiting the Israeli Diamond Exchange. How has the new just tell us about this, this initiative?
Well, this initiative for me is interesting simply because obviously Indonesia and Israel don't have trade relations. And as a result of that, you know, that's the last thing that we would expect for delegations from countries that Israel has no diplomatic relations with to actually be visiting Israel. In fact, you know, on the official side, one would suggest that these Indonesians wouldn't even get a visa to visit Israel because obviously there aren't any diplomatic relations. And yet Israel has shown itself willing to entertain and accommodate people coming from the Muslim world, from the Arab world, people who are interested in developing positive relations with Israel rather than, you know, to try to find ways to create conflict. And this is certainly the case with this delegation that's come from the Indonesian Chamber of Commerce and that arrived in Israel to visit the Diamond Exchange and indeed to meet with other people. Seven representatives all in all came from Indonesia. And I think that it's pleasing not only that, you know, Israel is willing to accommodate these people and to entertain them and to allow them to visit and to see things from the inside. But I think it's also a very important message that even people from Indonesia, where obviously the way that Israel is presented is in a very negative sense, even those people are willing to somehow open their eyes a little bit and come here to see for themselves what it's really like rather than to believe at face value everything that they're reading in the press or seeing on TV. So I think that this is a very important step. Indonesia obviously being a very, very large Muslim country, one of the largest in the world, in fact, in terms of the number of Muslims who live there. And so I think that this is an interesting development and hopefully, you know, we will be able to build on this. And it also shows that from trade and from economic activity potentially come diplomatic relations. And I think that that's an important message as well. And certainly Israel has pursued those types of activities with countries that she has no diplomatic relations with. So in other words, try to set up trade relations, trade delegations, Israeli Israelis have actually even been located in Arab countries around the world with the knowledge of the local authorities, but only on an economic and a trade level. So to try to somehow promote trade in those countries with Israel, as a precursor towards, ultimately establishing full diplomatic relations with them, when the time comes. So I think that this is a great feather in the cap for Israel that, you know, people are interested to come and see what the diamond exchange is like and indeed to visit other Israeli companies, but also a nice gesture on the part of the Indonesians, who obviously would not have an easy time having to explain to their colleagues and to members of the government why it is that they came to Israel when there are no diplomatic relations with Israel.
Absolutely. And finally, the Bank of Israel decided yesterday to keep interest rates at 0.25% for the next 2 months. What's the bank's assessment of the Israeli economy and the direction over the next few months?
Well, the bank has decided that the Israeli economy's growth needed to be the forecast growth for 2019 needed to be cut back slightly from 3.2% to 3.1%. So even though it's only 0.1% difference in the terms of the growth that's expected for this year, I think it is a substantial change. And the bank has also decided to revisit inflation, because if inflation is now slightly higher than the lowest level of the area, the predicted area, or the target range that the bank has set for Israel's economy. Inflation currently running at about 1.6% per annum, and that's been slightly up from the 1.5% that was previously the case. So certain movements, both in terms of economic growth and in terms of inflation, which have led the bank to decide, at least for now, not to adjust the interest rate, and was left at 0.25%. And this has been the case since last November, by the way, when it was adjusted from 0.1% to 0.25%. But the bank has also said that even though for the next 2 months the interest rates won't be changed, it's very much expecting to increase interest rates before the end of 2019 from the current level of 0.25% to 0.5% to 0.5%, and that there are probably likely to be 2 interest rate hikes already predicted for next year, which will leave interest rates at or around 1% by the end of next year. And this comes in spite of the fact that the US interest rates are expected to be cut in the coming months by the US Federal Reserve. So it seems to be moving in the opposite direction at the moment to what is expected in the US. And also, when we talk about the shekel and the strength of the shekel, it's quite noticeable that the shekel has strengthened by 4.3% in terms of effective exchange rate over the past year. And obviously, the stronger shekel, on the one hand, gives a very good indication of a strong economy. But on the other hand, it also means that export goods become a lot more expensive, and it's not particularly good for exports. So not everybody is happy about the fact that the shekel is so strong. But I think all in all, it's an interesting assessment of the Israeli economy, showing quite a strong economy at almost full employment at the moment, relatively low interest rates, only 0.25%, relatively low inflation, but also good economic growth. I mean, anything beyond 3%, I think, is to be commended. So it shows that Israel's economy is still growing at quite a substantial rate, and when you compare it to the rest of the world. But, you know, all of these macroeconomic indicators are good and are interesting and are important when Israel is discussed at various economic forums. But I think it does hide away the fact that there are still way too many people in Israel who are working hard and who are still unable to finish the month with the money that they earn. They find that the living expenses are just too high in comparison to what they're able to earn. And this is a very substantial economic issue that not only the Bank of Israel needs to consider, but clearly also the government, the Ministry of Finance, about how they're going to deal with this issue to try somehow to make more equal the situation between the haves and the have-nots in Israel, rather than to open up the gap, as has been the case over the past 2 years, where it seems as if though the people who have more are getting more and the people who have less are somehow winding up with even less than that, and somehow this gap needs to be bridged.
Very interesting indeed, and a very important conversation. It is 8 o'clock. That was Anthony Reich with your Israel Report. Anthony will be back with us tomorrow morning, same time, same place, and always with a detailed report from Israel. It's 8 o'clock. Here's your news with Zanati.